President Obama last week at the University of Colorado at Denver unveiled a student loan relief plan that he hopes will make a difference.
Because of this change, about 1.6 million Americans could see their payments go down by hundreds of dollars a month. And that includes some of the students who are here today.
But the program affects different students much differently, depending on your income, depending on whether or not you're a student now, and depending on to whom you are indebted. Joining us now, Anya Kamenetz. She's a staff writer for Fast Company magazine. The Village Voice nominated her for a Pulitzer Prize for contributions to the feature series Generation Debt, which became a book in 2006. She has written for the New York Times, appeared on CNN and National Public Radio, and been featured as a Yahoo Finance expert. A frequent speaker nationwide, Kamenetz blogs at fastcompany.com and the Huffington Post, among others. She's author of the new book, The EduPunk's Guide for Students Who Want a Low-Cost Education. Welcome to the show, Anya.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
To our listeners, have you borrowed a lot of money to get through college? Through student loans? Are you preparing to pay them off? Or what are you going to do with them? Give us a call and tell us what your plans are. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Anya, under the president's plan, current students who have both direct loans and bank-based guaranteed loans will get an interest rate reduction if they consolidate into the government's direct loan program. That's about 5.8 million students could qualify for the benefit, the White House estimates. What do you see as far as the future of this and how many people can actually benefit from it?
Well, you know, I mean, it's part of a longer-term program that the government's been following. Since Obama got into office, he performed a really important step of cutting the banks out of the student loan program. So there are no more bank-originated loans. These are for people who already have the bank loans. But from now on, going forward, there's just going to be direct loans from the Education Department. And that tends to mean that the federal government has tighter control over the things like the repayment options and the interest rates. So generally, that's a good thing. I mean, it's going to take some time, though, for people who have outstanding loans with Sallie Mae or something like that to get into the direct loan program. And this is designed to encourage that so people can simplify their payments.
The president's also accelerating a reduction in the maximum percentage of discretionary income that borrowers and income-based loan repayment plans pay from 15% to 10%. That was supposed to go into effect in 2014, and he's moving it up 2 years. Does that make a big difference?
Well, you know, the big difference there is really just to get more people aware of that program, because actually income-based repayment, it's an optional program. It's not something that you automatically are signed up for. And right now you have less than 500,000 students that are signed up, and we think that about 1.6 million students may be eligible under the new rules. So, you know, the really important thing here is that people just know that they have this option to lower their payments and limit them to a specific percentage of their discretionary income, because it can be a real lifesaver if your other option is to go into delinquency or default. You know, people really need to know that they have this option.
Next July, the interest rate on student loans will double to 6.8%. Why is that? Why is that happening? And how are some people going to cope with that? That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, interest rates, again, for federal student loans are controlled by the Department of Ed, and they tend to be responsive to what the interest rate is in the overall marketplace. So I can imagine after, you know, we've had a couple years now of record low interest rates across the board, and this is just a regulated scheduled increase. If there's a lot of outcry, you know, it's possible that the Department of Ed may adjust it. But your interest rate makes a big difference over the life of your loan in a 10-year repayment plan, and even more so if you go into these income-based repayments, you're stretching out the payments. And so if you are paying back the loan for 20 years and you have a 6.8% interest rate, the overall amount that you pay will be much higher.
We're talking about student loans. We're looking over the president's proposal or the president's announcement last week at the University of Colorado in Denver. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Anya Kamenetz, she's the author of the new book, at the EduPunk's Guide for Students Who Want a Low-Cost Education. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go onto the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So the EduPunk's guide for students who want a low-cost education. Some people are suggesting that a college education isn't worth it at all, particularly when we're talking about hundreds of, for undergrad, sometimes 50, 60, 70, 80, sometimes as much as $100,000 in debt after 4 or 5 years in college.
Right. So I've been looking for a few years at what, you know, the discontent with not only the cost of education, but also the relevance of education to the way that people learn today with all the digital resources available. And the EduPunk's Guide is a free ebook. It's sponsored by the Gates Foundation. And it's really my attempt to let people know about all the options that are out there for learning independently. You know, people may be aware of things like MIT OpenCourseWare, TED Talks, the Khan Academy, and these are all resources where people can go and learn absolutely free online. And so my guide, the EduPunk's Guide, is really a way to look at how to combine those resources to achieve your own learning goals, and whether that includes getting a degree, getting a license or certification, or just learning on your own. I think that there's a lot more options out there than there used to be.
But the college degree has never been more valuable in and of itself. The statistics show that the over the lifetime of a person who has gone to college versus one who has not, or has gotten a degree versus one who has not, the earnings are much higher.
Sure. I mean, that's something that economists have talked about for a long time. And what I say about it is your mileage may vary. I mean, the earnings of people with certain kinds of, for example, state licenses or certifications can be much higher on average than those of the average person with just a regular run-of-the-mill liberal arts degree, whereas your earnings with an engineering degree or a computer science degree may be much, much higher. And so it's really a combination of the average person's aptitude, interest, the resources that they have, the time that they have available, and you know, the value of the degree is not it's not an absolute, and it's not something that is identical for each person.
You've talked a lot about in your columns and your blogs about the life of the young in this country and how much harder it is to build a secure life, let alone survive in the economy now for young people than it was, say, 30 years ago. Lucky me. What is a prescription for success in an economy like this? Lowering your expectations?
Well, it's very interesting, you know, because I think that with, you know, for example, with this Occupy Wall Street movement, you really see young people for the first time kind of banding together to talk about their economic concerns. And we do have a lowering of wealth in this generation. It is going to be the first generation that doesn't do as well materially in by some measures as their parents did. But I do see a response that's really an altering of values. So a lot of millennials, as they're called, they tend to favor their time over their money. Many times they're more community-minded. This is a very high level of volunteering in this generation, and I think that there's a value shift that happens in response to the fact that, you know, it may not be all about getting the very you know, well-remunerated job in finance or in business, and instead people are very entrepreneurial. They're interested in making life with meaning.
Devin in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Devin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and say I read Anya's book, Do-It-Yourself Education, and Guide to Education, and had great success. Not too long after reading it, left college and have started my own business and am doing very well. So.
Did you finish college?
No, I did not. I decided that I, you know, learned everything I needed to know. I found out about UnCollege and Zero Tuition College, but with both resources online. Anya's resources that she mentioned earlier are great. And so I've kind of continued my education, but for free. And then I just started earning money on the side and started following my passions, which is far more interesting than sitting through any boring class that did not relate to my interests, which is commonly what I find my friends doing.
All right. Thanks for the call, Devin.
Hey.
That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah. a follower.
Yeah. Success story. And, you know, I mean, here's the thing. You can always go back to school if you decide that a degree is something that you really need to continue. You know, the average age of a college student in this country is 26.
I see what you're saying, but they don't make it very easy for people to go back who are working full time. You know, it's hard to get into a lot of graduate programs. It's hard to get into a lot of undergrad programs when they're synchronized across 1 or 2 years.
Well, in the Edupunks Guide, I talk very much about that, and I think that there's a host of schools that are starting to increase the flexibility that they offer people because they realize there's such a giant demand out there. And if you want an online program, undergrad or graduate, you know, you don't have to just go to the for-profit colleges that advertise on the bus stop. There are increasing numbers of public, you know, very reputable public institutions and nonprofit institutions that are offering online degree programs with the flexibility for working adults because this is something that's a real need. And I think that, you know, for people who are working and who have very clear educational goals, I think that, you know, anecdotally, it shows that they are much more likely to be successful in these sort of self-directed learning programs because they have to have the time management skills and the maturity to really be able to learn on their own.
In your Huffington Post article, you discuss some possible policy changes that should be considered on the national level going beyond, well beyond what the president has planned already. For one thing, forgiving all student debt.
Yeah, this is something that's gained a lot of popular support, and there's, you know, there's about 640,000 signatures on an online petition to abolish student loan debt to benefit and stimulate the economy. I don't see it as being, you know, I see it as being a sort of a political non-starter. There are many people who might resent the idea of college students who are a relatively privileged group getting their loans forgiven, but it does have a lot of popular intuitive appeal because we see that, you know, this is a huge drawback to the opportunity that we offer people. You know, you have opportunity, but it comes with a huge price tag.
So kind of like forgiving third world debt, you know, the idea is let them go and multiply and prosper.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's very similar to the issue of mortgage relief as well, and I particularly see the validity of it when you look at the private student loan industry. We haven't really talked about that, but, you know, outside of federally subsidized student loans, you can get a private loan from a bank, which is pretty similar to putting your college degree on a credit card. It's 10 to 15% interest rates, much more stringent repayment requirements, and those loans are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. So they're very, very dangerous types of debt, and they're growing extremely quickly. And without really good options for students to get rid of those loans in bankruptcy or any other way, I see that as being a really big looming problem on the horizon, and debt relief may be an option at some point.
And you're saying that that's another one of those policy changes, rein in private student loans.
Absolutely. I think we should severely limit the availability of private student loans and the interest rates that they can charge. I think they should be much more brought in line with what the federal student loan payments are. And, you know, banks are going to say, well, we can't offer the loan at 6.8%. We have to offer it at 15%. And I would say, well, then, you know, those loans should not be available and people should be borrowing less overall. And if that means that they have to save money in college, well, then you push the policy discussion over into what I think it really needs to be, which is what is the cost of college and why does tuition go up so quickly?
Another one of those policy changes along the same lines, expand income-based repayment and public service loan forgiveness. So not just forgiving the loan, but having an attachment to that.
Right. So the income-based repayment program, which Obama's highlighted in his recent announcement, it's a very important program, but it's not something that everyone's eligible for. You know, you have to be earning a certain amount. And there are countries, I think Australia had a kind of a similar plan, but the automatic repayment plan for everyone who takes out a student loan in the country is they all pay a percentage of their income when they get out. And the way that, you know, that actually works out quite nicely because people who are very successful because of their education, they end up paying more. People that choose a lower paying professions end up paying less, and it all evens out. So to make an automatic income-based repayment plan rather than something you have to apply for, I think would be a much fairer way of dealing with the social cost, which we see that it's a public good as well as a private good.
And then also reinstate bankruptcy for student loans.
You know, if I could make one change, Anne, in the policies around student loans, it would definitely be bankruptcy protection.
Explain how that matters.
Well, every other kind of consumer debt that you take out, you know, be it a house, be it a car, be it credit card debt, if something goes wrong in your life and it's not like you expected and you can't manage the payments anymore, you have the right to apply for relief to a court. And that was taken away for federal student loans, and then in 2005 it was taken away for private unsubsidized student loans. And so what that means is if you fall behind on your student debt, the banks are free to apply unlimited interest rate charges, penalty fees, punitive interest rates, and the debt snowballs, and it really gets to a point where people's lives are completely consumed with it because, you know, they tell you that you owe now $100,000 on an original $20,000 loan, and there's absolutely nothing you can do with it. There's no good negotiation. And so people's lives are being completely ruined by this.
Mary, you're on campus. Welcome to the show. Mary, you're on the air with Anya Kamenetz.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a recruiter for the Department of Horticulture and Professional Golf Management in the College of Ag. And I personally was a first-year, a first-generation college student back whenever I signed all my life away. I went to a private school out of state. That was stupid. I mean, in my situation, it was large family. Nobody had any money. And I ended up with such an enormous amount of debt. I didn't know what I was doing at 18 years old. I had no idea that I was signing my life away. I just wanted to go to school. Now, as a recruiter now, I see that also clearly, of course, hindsight. But when I get my prospective students in, you know, I encourage everybody. I say, go to college. Everybody needs to go to college. Please at least try it. Go for a year and see if that works out for you regardless. You can borrow the money to go to Ohio State for 1 year, and that's doable. Back when I was in school, I think the Fannie Mae rates were like 8%.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were really high. And I like the idea very much of the sliding scale, the sliding scale, the percentage of your income, because I honestly went for a very impractical degree. And I wanted to go to college, and I felt it was very important.
You know, what Mary's saying is a lot. It reminds me, and Mary, thank you very much for that call. It reminds me a lot of what people are saying about who getting into their first house. They've been sold a bill of goods. They've been convinced that you can afford this, and they do it, and then they come back 5 years later and go, oh my gosh, what did I get into?
Well, there's a big discussion around the idea that it's good debt, and you know the degree is going to pay off, and don't worry about it now, just think about it later. And you know, I'm glad that Mary called, because I think that there's a huge role for not only financial aid offices, but everyone at the university to really have an open and frank discussion about this and what your overall loan is going to be. And that's why I'm really glad to see actually, you know, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which is the new regulatory agency, has come out with new guidelines for financial aid letters. Because a lot of times now when you get the financial aid letter, and parents will know this, it's really hard to decipher what is a loan and what is a grant, and not to mention what is your overall loan bill going to be after the 4 years, or for many people it's 5 or 6 years by the time they finally get out. So we really need much clearer communication, and the new rules are going to make those financial aid letters much easier to read and to interpret so that people understand, you know, this isn't just $5,000, it's going to be $20,000 by the time you get out, or it could be $30,000. And people really need to think about that and what the cost is going to be.
Well, do those new rules address when you receive the financial aid letter? Because a lot of people are already accepted into the college or university by the time they get that letter.
They absolutely are, and that's a really good point.
The cow's
totally
out of
right.
the barn or whatever they say. It's over
no,
with.
No, you're totally right about that. And, you know, it is after acceptance that people get the financial aid letters. If there were clearer rules and more standard rules across the board from the Education Department about, you know, what kind of aid could be applied in what cases, you know, there's a lot of discretion within financial aid offices as to how much aid they're going to offer each person, and that's why you really don't know what you're going to get, and it is a bit of a pig in a poke.
Anya Kamenetz, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Anya is the author of the new book, The EduPunk's Guide for Students Who Want a Low-Cost Education. Coming up when we return, a couple of student loan experts. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The The war we are living reveals the other Colombia in rural areas away from the capital where the war is all too real. And now the battle is over gold. In one area, two extraordinary Afro-Colombian women are fighting to hold on to the gold-rich land that has sustained their community for centuries. The women are part of a powerful network of female leaders who found that in wartime, women can organize more freely than men. Watch Women, War and Peace, The War We Are Living, Tuesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. 46 degrees in downtown Columbus with some showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly before 2 o'clock this afternoon, a high of 51 degrees. And then gradually clearing overnight tonight, the rain should be tapering off by this evening, a low of 32. Some sunshine for Tuesday, a high of 59.
Support for 89.7 comes from Thurber House, presenting Karen Russell, author of Swamplandia, a tale of a family of alligator wrestlers, Thursday evening, November 3rd at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at thurberhouse.org.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. President Obama last week at the University of Colorado at Denver unveiled a student loan relief plan that he hopes will make a difference. Joining us now is Heather Jarvis. 6 years ago, Equal Justice Works hired Heather to become a student loan expert for law students interested in public interest law. Now, Heather has her own website, AskHeatherJarvis.com, providing educational resources and training for student loan borrowers. The Project on Student Debt calls her the Student Loan Ranger. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Thanks very much.
Also with us, Tally Hart. She's the director of the Economic Access Initiative at Ohio State University. Prior to her current position, Tally was the director of the Student Financial Aid Office at OSU. Tally is the co-founder and coordinator of College Goal Sunday, a multi-state effort to improve access to higher education for needy students. Welcome to the show, Tally.
Good morning.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about student loan debt. We all know how you can get it. We're talking about maybe how to get rid of it or mitigate the pain of student loan debt. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question. For Tally and Heather, what do you think of President Obama's student loan plan that he announced last week? How significant are the changes that he's proposing? Tally?
I think your prior guest hit it on the head, Ann, and that is that it gets information out about an existing loan function, the Income Contingent Loan Program, that more former students should take advantage of than have taken advantage of the program. I don't think it does a great deal to, across the board, assist students in debt. But again, if it allows citizens to take advantage of existing programs, it's a good thing.
Heather Jarvis?
I agree. I think that the president is doing what he can to help student loan borrowers, and the initiatives he announced will help many current students and borrowers somewhat. But there's only so much the administration can do. Congress is really in charge of student loan policy, and they will need to act to make any real sweeping changes.
Tally, you're helping students and their families make decisions about debt at the front end when they're preparing to finance a college education.
Yes.
Or trying to. And now you're especially focused on low-income students.
That's right.
So how has the student financial aid picture changed in recent years, or has it not changed much?
It hasn't changed much in what's available. Fortunately, there are some new provisions that allow Pell Grants to increase, so lowest-income students are doing well. Relatively. I'm not saying they're adequate, but they're at least getting some grant funding. There are just so many important information strategies that are essential so a student doesn't have to get into debt. I'd really encourage any future borrower to look at a new federal requirement that just went into place. It's called a net cost calculator. That will give you an idea about what students borrow on average, Now, that's key, as your prior discussant said. That's average, like 2.3 children. So you've got to figure out how you fit in there. But it'll tell you a lot about what students at your future college borrowed. The one thing that students miss a lot, and hear me chime in a lot about, is simply getting your loan, your student aid application on time. That is strictly the way, by being late, that more students get into debt and get away from the best type of aid available to them. One of my students said it well: better late than never works in everything except financial aid. In financial aid, late is never.
Is it really possible to avoid taking out student loans for a typical student these days?
No, not a typical student, I would say. Now, could you avoid it? I think it's a question of how convenient students find it. There certainly are strategies, and there are a number of students who do avoid student debt. But in fact, half of the students in the country take out student debt. And so on average, yes, it is the case that you have debt if you go to college.
Heather Jarvis, you help students on the back end. It's a done deal by the time you get a hold of them. They've graduated from college or professional school, law school, and their loans are now due. And I'm wondering, you know, because you even exist in the role that you play, they must not be very well prepared for the choices they're making.
Well, I think it's true that they're not necessarily well prepared, but you'd be surprised how complicated it all is, Anne. You know, I work with some of the most educated and sophisticated members of our society, and they still have an awfully hard time getting to the bottom of their student loan situation. I mean, I'm an educated attorney, and I spend all day, every day, working to understand student loans and the student loan repayment process, because that's what it takes. The system is excessively complicated, and it isn't set up to be borrower-friendly or easy to access. So one of the things I'm most excited about that the Obama administration has recently announced are additional efforts on the part of both the administration and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to help unpack the mysterious structure of student loan programs and student loan repayment. And I often joke that, you know, I found the financial aid process to be one of the trickiest things I had to learn throughout my education. And, you know, I'm really not kidding about that.
I remember showing up that first day when they used to cut you the checks. You actually got a check. And not even having any of the foggiest idea how much money was going to be coming to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if that's normal still or not.
You know, I think it really is, and I think it depends on what kind of family you come from, too. I'm delighted that people like Tally are helping low-income students. You know, my sister and I are the first generation in our families to get any college education as well, and so I knew that there was something called financial aid, and I knew it was for people like me who didn't have cash to pay for college. But what I didn't really understand was that much of the financial aid was student loans, and sure, I knew they were loans and I'd have to pay them back, but I didn't fully recognize how much of my future earnings I was actually spending when I was in school. You know, I work with a lot of high debt borrowers, people who have graduate and professional educations, and they're in a situation similar to me. You know, I borrowed $125,000 to pay for my legal education. I've been making payments on my student loans for 14 years, and I have 17 years left to go. I've been paying diligently every month, and I will continue to do so, but that's going to go on for my entire adult life, and next year is when I start borrowing money to help my first eldest child pay for her college education.
Tally, you've talked about how students you learned how students were not taking advantage of scholarships and grants available to them in the past. Is that still the case, or do you feel like there is more sophistication now in terms of tapping into that? And I'm wondering if the internet doesn't help too.
There is sophistication, but it tends to be not like students like you and me and Heather, who were first generation. The sophistication tends to be with upper-income families and middle-income families, who, as Heather points out, are much more accustomed to navigating complex financial transactions. The real problem with access and getting through college to success is that our lowest income students are least likely to get advice that they need to get through this process. We're really lucky here in Columbus to have organizations like I Know I Can in the public schools that give students advice, but it also means the family has to know to go look for that advice, and that's one of the biggest challenges we face.
Heather Jarvis, you say that social media has changed things for the better for student loan borrowers. They're not as isolated now.
Yeah, I think that's right. People are able to converse with one another about what they find difficult, give each other tips for navigating the system. I think there is less of a sense of isolation, but I don't necessarily think that there's that student loan borrowers in community with one another have everything they need to navigate the system. So I think it's terrific how we can deliver information a lot more quickly and through various channels. But I think that there needs to be more investment both by schools and by the government to ensure that good information that's usable by borrowers is being distributed through these fantastic outlets.
Denise, you're on the air from Lewis Center. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Mm-hmm. When you hear a lot of news about the student loan forgiveness, I think a lot of the general public kind of gets this image of a kind of a free ride for someone who's maybe an English major or they didn't quite plan out their future. But for someone like me, I'm in the VET program at OSU, and they do a really good job at OSU of kind of informing us, you're going to walk out of here with maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, but you're okay with that because you're going to be using that knowledge that you're gaining to kind of help the general public health, not just yourself. But I think that when people hear about the debt loan forgiveness, they don't realize that that could really help them in general, as far as medical students, veterinary students. It's not just about giving free rides to individuals, about kind of improving the general good.
Okay. Tally Hart?
That's one of the reasons that I'm a real proponent of income contingent loans. I think we do have a problem in this country in reducing debt for those of you willing to go into professions that are in the public good.
Social workers.
Mm-hmm. Public service of every variety. And so that's one of the reasons I'm glad that the Obama plan is placing more focus on that. We need more, without question. But I agree with Heather that this is the most that the president can do as an executive. But maybe we'll again put a spotlight on the Congress to effect further change to make it possible to get a good education, a good vet med or legal education, and still work in an area of public need in this nation.
Denise, did you get your degree?
I'm still working on it.
What are you working on?
I'm a second year vet student, so I'm going to be getting my doctorate in vet med.
About 100 years from now, it probably feels like, right?
it's not so far off.
Okay.
But it's frightening when they tell you you're going to be graduating with maybe even $200,000 of debt, and your starting salary averages around maybe $67,000, which is a great salary if you don't have $200,000 of debt on your shoulders. And that ratio, it can make it really scary to reach that graduating point. I mean, you're excited that you're done and you're going to get out there and do some good, but at the same time, your deferments end and
yeah,
it just piles on.
Well, hang in there.
I'll try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a quick break. Then when we return, we'll continue our conversation about the student loan debt situation in the United States. What you can do, we have a couple of experts with us, Tally Hart, director of the Economic Access Initiative at Ohio State University, and also Heather Jarvis is a student loan expert. She manages AskHeatherJarvis.com. It's a website dedicated to providing educational resources and training for student loan borrowers. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm the last leaf on the tree.
Tom Waits from his new CD, Bad as Me. Keith Richards joins him on a couple of tracks, including this one. We hear from Tom Waits on the next Fresh Air.
I'm the last leaf on the tree. When the autumn wind blows, they're all.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Tonight on WOSU-TV, watch a lineup that features some of the biggest names in comedy, including Jack Black, Conan O'Brien, and Molly Shannon, as they present Will Ferrell with the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Watch tonight at 9 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the 17th Annual Ohio Pen Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Crown Plaza, Dublin, featuring 160 tables of old and new writing instruments, calligraphy classes, and seminars. OhioPenShow.com.
Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow morning at 11 for Tech Tuesday, a discussion of social media, consumerism, and gadgetry. That's on Tech Tuesday tomorrow at 11. And there is a good chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm this afternoon. It should be tapering off after 2 o'clock, gradually clearing tonight, a low of 32 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about financial aid for higher education. Give us a call if you have a question or comment, because our guests are a couple of experts. Heather Jarvis, student loan expert who manages AskHeatherJarvis.com. And also Tally Hart, director of the Economic Access Initiative at Ohio State University. The number to call is 614-292-8513. And the email address is allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. I do have some emails. We've got some calls coming in. The email from Kayla: what could Obama's plan mean for individuals such as myself that did not qualify for Pell Grants due to a parent's income? My mother made just enough money to disqualify both myself and my sister, but in no way made enough money to pay out of pocket. She is now burdened with more than $900 a month in PLUS loans, loan payments between my sister and my loans, while I am paying everything that I can on my federal loans. Heather Jarvis?
Well, unfortunately, parent PLUS loans are not eligible for income-based repayment. So the Obama initiative to fast-track the improvements to income-based repayment will not help her mom. Sounds like she and her sister both have their own federal student loan debt, and their federal student loan debt will be and has been eligible for the income-based repayment plan, which can be a fantastic solution for a lot of student loan borrowers. And the president has increased the effectiveness of that program and has moved up the effective date of the improvements. So she may well benefit from that. She may also benefit from the special consolidation provisions that have been announced. So that's going to apply to a limited number of folks, but it sounds like it might apply to this person who has inquired, because it's for people who borrowed their first federal student loan in 2008 or later, and who will also be borrowing a federal student loan in 2012. So for the people in that situation, they may, depending on the student loans they have, be eligible for a special consolidation loan with some interest rate reductions associated with it.
Heather, what have you found the student loan system means for the future career choices of American students? Our caller a little while ago kind of got to that there needs to be some appreciation for the fact that people are going to go into low income but very beneficial careers.
Yeah, right. Denise was mentioning how expensive her veterinary medicine degree is. And really this is another example of how there is some good relief available right now, but that is not broadly understood or well publicized. So in 2007, public service loan forgiveness was created along with income-based repayment. And public service loan forgiveness is available now, and it's for borrowers of federal student loans who are entering into public service like work for the government or work for a 501c3 nonprofit. And for people who choose that as their career, many can make reduced payments on their student loans based on their income, and if they do that over the course of 10 years in service, then they can have the remaining balance of their student loans forgiven. Unfortunately, like with everything else student loan related, it's more complicated than that, and I've actually spent a lot of time working on resources to help people understand how to access these benefits. And the way I like to put it is that in order to earn public service loan forgiveness, a borrower has to make the right kind of payments on the right kind of loans while they're in the right kind of job. And they have to do that over and over again every month for 10 years. And then they have to prove that they've met the requirements of the program to the government. But public service loan forgiveness is terrific, and it is currently available, as is income-based repayment. Unfortunately, neither of these programs help people with private student loan debt. And I imagine that Tally would agree that private student loans are not as flexible for borrowers as federal student loans are. They don't have the same repayment provisions. They don't have the same protections for borrowers. So we typically encourage people to look to the federal student loan programs first if they must borrow, and not until after they've taken loans from federal programs should they even consider borrowing private student loans.
Tally?
Heather, for a lot of our students who are targeted to very low-income students, I will tell them flat out, just simply don't borrow a private loan. It just adds too much to the long-term cost of their education. And if you have to do that, I think you have to look at other alternatives to structure how you're paying for college, especially with the lack of bankruptcy provisions for the private loan. If we had to add one back for my vote, it would be the private loans to be able to be considered under bankruptcy, even if we didn't get all the way to federal loans again. But I think without those kind of mechanisms, that very low-income students that I serve, I just simply say, don't do it. Let's figure out some other way to get you through and to complete your education without moving to a private loan.
Well, for very low-income students, what are those ways?
There are a number of them. I mentioned doing your application on time. Look for outside scholarships through groups like fastweb.com. They're good, free scholarship search services. Save a little bit while you're in high school. There's a program, a federal program through I Know I Can in Columbus City Schools that will allow you to save and have your savings met to go to college. Work is always a good alternative so long as it's a modest amount. A student who works part-time while going to school full-time is a very successful strategy to get through your education so that you begin earning and still not to have to borrow so much.
614-292-8513. If you call that number, you can get online with us or get on the air with us to talk about the student loan issue. Do you have a student loan out there? How are you paying it off? Give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeff in Gahanna, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. I enjoy your programs.
Thanks, Jeff.
My question is this. Is there any talk or movement in the United States on ending the use of student loans being repaid by usury and going to a system that might be perhaps simpler, like fee-based? And that's my question. That's
okay.
All. Thank you.
All right. Heather or Tally Hart, you want to?
I don't see the conversation happening at the federal level about ending student loans. I certainly do hear a number of advocacy organizations and student-driven activist efforts aimed at making radical changes to the student loan programs. But really, the current system of access to higher education is a debt-based one. As Tally has mentioned, there are some grants and scholarships, and certainly those should be pursued by everyone. But there is not enough in order to keep up with the rising costs of education. So the way things stand right now, we are putting the cost of education on students and their parents through student loan programs. And I haven't heard any radical proposals for changing that wholesale.
Duala, you're on the air from Gahanna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Yes, I'm actually in a very particular situation where early on, I did borrow from private institutions, and you know, and out of necessity, because of the cost of the living keeps rising, and as a single parent who had to subsidize, who had to maybe, you know, who had to work less hours because they had to attend school, are there any programs available where I could consolidate, or a person could take some of their private loans and maybe merge them into a federal type of program or a federal loan and just pay that off towards the end? Because you are right. I mean, they do get expensive towards the end.
Heather Jarvis?
No, unfortunately, you cannot turn your private student loans into federal student loans, although there have been various proposals in Congress to allow some limited opportunity for people with private loans to convert them into federal loans under certain circumstances. Those have not gone anywhere so far. The only real option for reconsolidating or improving your private student loan situation is to find a product that will allow you to refinance. And so that's going to be really credit-based. And if you have an awesome credit score and credit history, it's possible that you could find a lower interest rate and a better loan. Otherwise, you're really on the hook. And many of the student loan relief programs simply do not apply to private student loans, unfortunately.
Okay. Take care. Good luck. We have just a few minutes left. 614-292-8513 if you want to get that call in. And Mort, you're in Westerville and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
I want to compliment Ann on this program, which is hitting a lot of hot buttons, and every student and parent should hear it, especially if they do not have a clear career path. The comment I would like to hear is the possible need for the government loan program to develop an independent core of advisors who do not have any ulterior motive in filling courses. I've heard a lot of horror stories.
Tally Hart?
I think there is an independent advisory board to the Congress called the Advisory Committee on Student Financial Aid, and they are systematically taking a look at these issues. They invite open testimony, and they hear very rarely from families or students. And so that is one avenue available to a citizen to try to influence policy, and I would encourage you to take advantage of it.
Any thoughts on that, Heather Jarvis?
Yes, I also think in response to the caller that one thing that would be very helpful would be for the government to create more access to one-on-one counseling opportunities for students and their parents, both about financial aid on the front end and also about understanding student loans and repaying student loans. As it has been historically, schools' financial aid offices do what they can to be of assistance to these families, but really are not designed or resourced in sufficiently to be able to help everyone individually when they are repaying student loans. That has fallen on the lenders, who are not as much a part of the program anymore since this switched to federal direct lending. And so now the government absolutely needs to do more. But I think the caller's point is very important, that currently the people who have the expertise in these areas are involved in the system in some way. Either they are higher education professionals within schools who have an interest in matriculating students, or they are part of the lending or collecting arm of the federal student loans or private student loan programs. So there are very few people like me who don't have a financial stake in how someone chooses to borrow or repay. And there really needs to be some more thought given to how we could fund such service for borrowers.
Thank you, Mort. We have time for just about one more call. Dennis in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thank you, and first-time caller. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Hey, my question is, I followed the process as a low-income student and utilized all of the grants and scholarships and loan process that I needed as a to get my first degree. Was in a career for several years and decided to change and to go into nursing school. My question for the panel is, because I've utilized those types of financial vehicles in the past, am I available to receive Pell Grants any further?
Are you still eligible?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Tally Hurt?
No, you aren't eligible because you have, if I understood your observation, you've completed your undergraduate degree. Is that right?
That's correct.
There are, however, other federal programs for healthcare professionals. And so I would encourage you to check with the schools of nursing where you plan to apply and see what other types of federal grants might be available to you, even though you no longer qualify for the Pell Grant.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Dennis. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Just Heather Jarvis, any parting thoughts? Because it looks like the price of education is just going to keep going up. And no matter what, they don't seem to change things very fast in Washington. What are your expectations for the future?
Well, my expectations are exactly what you say, and things aren't going to change anytime very soon. I haven't myself seen Congress moving very quickly on anything, especially lately. So I think that that students should try to protect themselves by following the advice that Tally and I have given them so far, especially in getting whatever free money is available, and above all, avoiding private student loan debt, which can be very risky and expensive for borrowers. If you must borrow, borrow federal student loans, and then be sure you understand your student loans. Make sure exactly what kind you have, understand your rights and responsibilities as a borrower, and ask lots of questions because it's not easy. But there are some good solutions and ways that people can afford to repay their student debt.
Heather Jarvis, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Heather Jarvis, she's a student loan expert. She manages AskHeatherJarvis.com. It's a website dedicated to providing educational resources and training for student loan borrowers. And Tally Hurt, thanks for joining us again. It's great
thanks,
to see
Anne.
You.
Thanks, Anne. Nice to see you.
Tally Hart's the director of the Economic Access Initiative at Ohio State University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium's lecture series presenting Year of the Turtle with leading experts Rick Hudson and Dr. Omar Atom on Thursday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the OSU Fawcett Center. More at columbuszoo.org.